From barbecues to cricket teas and whiskey tasting to strawberry picking, the last 10 weeks have been jam-packed. We've opened a new pub, there's been lots of new dishes, and we've even picked up some awards as well. And I've welcomed some extra special guests to share their knowledge with you. So, in this final episode of Seasoned, I thought it was high time we look back and celebrated what an unusual, but fantastic summer we've had on the farm, and we'll take a sneak peek at what the rest of the year has in store as the nights start to draw in. My name is Tommy Banks, and you're listening to Seasoned, my podcast all about life at my restaurant, The Black Swan, and the farm where we grow all of the ingredients. This is the story of the journey from field to fork. This is Seasoned, episode 20, The End of Summer. I know lots of you will be tuning in to find out if you're the winner of our big giveaway, our luxury meal and stay at the Black Swan. And later in the episode, I'll be revealing the name of our winner. Can't wait. But I also want to let you know that after this week, subscribers to Well Seasoned will still receive their monthly newsletter and bonus content, and we'll have another giveaway for you at the end of September too. So here we are, episode 20. I'll be honest, there was a time in the middle of summer where I really didn't think we'd get this far. It's been an absolute whirlwind. From running events at Wimbledon and Lords to the British Grand Prix, I spent a lot of the summer in London or on the motorway back and forth. Meanwhile, my family and the team in Yorkshire have been busier than ever. Opening the Abbey Inn took a monumental effort from everyone, but just 9 weeks ago I was able to walk you around the site as we opened our doors for the first time. Here we are, the new pub. I absolutely love this place. There's just so many memories for me as well, because my first job was here. Literally had my first beers there. I used to work as a pot wash. It was like really hard work. It always is in a kitchen. And then finish my shift and sit in that corner on a sofa and have a beer and fall asleep. It was perfect. I just love growing up in a restaurant. So much fun. People have been coming in and just like, it looks like it used to look. But the thing is, this beautiful stone flag floors, all the brickwork, exposed stone. So the last thing you want to do is really change any of that. But there's been a lot of work in here in the last few months. My wife Charlotte and her mum have been roped in. They did like 3 weeks worth of painting just to get it up in time. I think we've had a lot of favours from a lot of friends to get ready, but I just think it looks great. It's really charming pub, which was what I really wanted.
The whole pub has had a total refurb, and I want it to be cosy, relaxing, somewhere you can enjoy a pint and a pork pie as well as a delicious three-course meal. And getting it open on time was a close run and very hard thing. I think we had about 2 hours to spare.
Opening the Abbey Inn was hard. I mean, I'd forgotten how hard it is. When we opened Roots, that was really difficult, and I sort of thought this would be easier, but it was really exhausting. I think it's really funny, you spend your time as a chef and running businesses trying to like get everything perfect and get all your systems in place, but then when you open somewhere fresh, it's like learning to do it all over again. I must admit, I've not been as tired as I've been opening this in a very, very long time, but the team have done incredibly well. It was, like always, these things go to the wire. You put deadlines on things, but ultimately, whatever the deadline is, you always end up going to the deadline. But we're ready on time.
Seeing the pub come alive over the last 2 months has been great. You've been visiting in your hundreds, filling the dining room and propping up the bar. And you've been ordering those burgers faster than we can make them. What I've loved most though is that the Abbey Inn has been able to complete the circle, providing a home for much of the produce we grow on the farm which doesn't make it onto the menu at either Roots or the Black Swan. For the first time, we can farm animals knowing the whole nose to tail will be used, and with our quick thinking chefs and daily specials, we can ensure that there's little to no waste coming from the farm. Our Manglets of Pigs have been a running theme across this podcast, and earlier this season, the first ones made it onto our menu, and I had the honour of cooking and tasting them to see if all the hard work keeping them had been worthwhile.
Now, when you're cooking like a pork chop like this, you kind of want it a nice medium-ish, maybe a little bit more than medium. You don't want to cook it all the way through so it'll go dry. A lot of people are used to traditionally having pork in that way. It smells incredible. Like, there's so much fat that just touching it, just touching the steak itself, it's covered my hand in fat. Never really seen an animal quite like this before. I don't know, Liam, when you're cooking these, you're going to have to work very hard on rendering the fat, I think. Oh yeah, this is, we're going to do a whole Mangalitsa part of the menu. So we've got, this weekend, we've got the T-bones, we've got the pork chops, we've got some rump steaks, we've also got some Cumberland sausages that we've made as well. So yeah, a whole Mangalitsa part of the menu.
A few more minutes and I think we're just about there. I've invited Abby in, head chef Charlie, to taste it with me. He'll be the one cooking them after all, when they inevitably fly off the shelves next week.
Yeah, I think we should serve it whole on the bone.
Yeah, I agree, it looks mega. Do you want to do the honours?
The colour of it is quite interesting, isn't it? It's just a bit darker than normal pork. I think the cooking degree is right.
The fat's unbelievable. Mm.
Yeah, and it actually renders down to really very little. Mm. I understand it now. It's the Wagyu of the pork world.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That fat. You actually just want to eat lumps of the fat.
Yeah.
It really is worlds apart from any other pork I've ever eaten.
Those Mangalitsa steaks were so popular, we sold out in just a few days. But we've been working on lots of great dishes to harness the uber tasty and abundant fat that you get with a Mangalitsa. In fact, Dickie even made me a little present last week, some Mangalitsa meatballs. Elsewhere on the farm, we told you about our rescue hens, which are keeping the Abbey and my dad topped up with eggs.
There's a hen in with these cows.
Yeah, the hens are on walkabout. There's these beech trees over here, they roost up there on a night, and they're laying anywhere, so we're having to go all around trying to find eggs, just like we used to when you were a lad.
Yeah.
Just find eggs, wait for them to cluck and see where they are.
But so that's proper free range?
Yeah.
Regular laying hens in a commercial farm have a relatively short laying life, about 18 months. And after that, well, they're not producing quite as many eggs as they once did, and it doesn't make sense for a commercial farmer. So they just got rid of. It's all about the economics of keeping a hen versus the price of the eggs. But on our farm, we decided to give these retired hens a new lease of life, and they seem to be loving it.
So molting is when a hen stops laying, but also they molt and they lose off a lot of the feathers.
Lose the feathers.
They don't look that healthy, do they?
Yeah.
So these ones that have come from this intensive
farm, quite a few feathers lost.
They don't look so healthy, but once they've been, you know, in a nice environment for a while, they start to look and behave like a normal hen again.
But we've had hens that were, you know, what you might call wild hens, ones that have taken to living in the trees on their own, and they're 10 years old, no problem at all.
Yeah, I think they just don't lay every day, do they?
No.
Which is absolutely fine for our model of farming. So how many eggs are we getting at the moment?
Oh, about 2 dozen.
Yeah.
But and it varies. Actually, this really hot weather, they've gone off a little bit.
Yeah.
And it does depend whether we can find them. Now, in the back to the old circumstances, it's a question of you find a nest of eggs when you find them.
Last week I was poaching them down at the Abbey. We were serving them with some local asparagus just on the specials board, and they were beautiful.
Oh yeah, but those were bringing you the ones that we collected that morning.
Yeah, so we've got just enough to put on the specials board then, really.
I think that's all we've got, yeah, because I do need 4 for myself every day.
Little confession, my wife and I did help ourselves to your eggs the other day, so sorry about that, TB. And in the middle of the season, we took you behind the scenes as we took on the challenge of shearing all of our sheep.
Lovely. Come on, girls. Hup. Go on. Push, 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 push. Push, push, push. Come on. Hup, up, up. Hup, up, up. Come on.
Trying to move these sheep is a challenge. If you want them to go left, they'll go right, and any chance they get, they escape.
Keep pushing it this way and we'll get it back in there once it goes back round the corner. Go on, girl. Turn around. Go on, girl. Back that way. Back that way. Go on. Up you go. Up you go. Go on. Let's go this way. Come on.
Processing the sheep like this allows us to check over every single one and make sure they're healthy. All the adults get a vaccine shot along with a haircut.
How many are we on, Anna? 32. Few to go.
Way back at the start of this season, I treated you all to a barbecue special, which I have to say was a lot of fun. From what fuel to use to how to get the perfect caramelization on your steak, we went through all the secrets to elevate your barbecue game.
So when your barbecue is ready to cook on, you want to see the coals glowing white. I'm using Binchitan, which literally translates from Japanese as white coals, so you can actually see how white these are. But really, you don't want to be seeing any flame. Yeah, there might be a few lick up when you start cooking, but all the flame should have died down, and hopefully your coals are really bright white and hot, and you should be able to feel heat up here. So I've gone for an awesome Bavette steak. It also gets called skirt or goose steak. So it's got a few different names if you go to the butchers. I just think it's an awesome cut because it's very, very cheap. So I've got 2 8-ounce steaks there and they cost me £7. So it's about as cheap a steak you can get. And this is effectively a muscle from the diaphragm. So it's a nice thin muscle. And what you do is you cook it very rare. So it's a perfect thing to cook on a barbecue, slice really thinly, and then you can dress it in something like, I don't know, salsa verde or chimichurri or something like that. And the other thing I've done is made a miso butter, which is basically butter, brown butter. So I've let it caramelize a little bit and added miso to it. This is a miso that Dickie makes on the farm and it is delicious.
That sound and smell, it's addictive.
With this cut, because you want it quite rare, I'd actually cook it on a high heat and then rest it probably for longer than I've cooked it for and then slice it really thinly. But this miso butter will go really well with anything. I like it with fish as well on the barbecue.
Use a pair of tongs to keep picking up and moving the food and keep an eye out for where the hottest bit of the barbecue is. You can rotate the different food around the grill to make sure it cooks evenly.
So I think for a lot of people, they worry about getting too much colour, almost burning the food on a barbecue. And the secret to not doing that is actually to make sure that your barbecue's at the right temperature before you start cooking, so the coals have died down enough. So you can see that this is cooking nicely, but there's no flames, there's no smoke. But if I lift that up, you're getting a really nice colour on there. It's not black, it's not like when you see people's sausages that have been cremated. It's actually just getting a beautiful caramelisation, which is all flavour. The flames lick up because I've added the fat to it, so as the butter drips off, that'll set fire, and I get a little bit of flame. If it's too much, which is just done because the wind's just blown, just pull it to the side, let it die out, which it will, and then just start cooking again.
If you've got your barbecue set up just right, you can keep the sausages and burgers warm on the top without them suddenly overcooking, and with a bit of luck, you can serve everything all at once.
There you have it, less than a tenner, steak, asparagus, easy.
Juices, man. Mm-hmm. Steak, asparagus, done, and you can't stop me tucking in.
Yeah, I just think there's something magical about miso, butter, steak, fire. It just tastes delicious. Also, I think we must have cooked on open fire when we were cave people. So therefore, I think in our brains, there's something delicious about it. It just tastes incredible.
Mmm. And the tips didn't stop there as we dedicated a whole episode to the wonderful British strawberry.
Look at that, that is just, I don't think anything screams summer more than a perfectly ripe strawberry, and actually British summer. I think it's the one thing we have the very best of in the world is strawberries. And it's incredibly nice, really sweet. And you just want to eat them, don't you? You don't really want to do anything to them other than just eat as many as you can. But The best thing you can do is go pick your own with strawberries. Well, firstly, because you can get really good value, you can eat a few on the way round, but they tend to be the best value. You're buying the fruit really fresh. It doesn't really matter if you pick small ones or big ones, so long as they're really ripe, they're absolutely delicious, whatever you get. And I think, like with a lot of fruit, if you pick them on a nice warm day, the sugars are so concentrated and they're really sweet, and then you just want to take them straight home and make something with them, cook them, eat them, and you're going to capture that flavour. When you put them in the fridge, it always dampens the flavour down a little bit. Same with tomatoes or anything like that. If you went to pick your own, picked a nice punnet of bright ruby red strawberries and went back and cooked with them that afternoon, you're going to get that magic seasonal moment. Remember when I was a kid, my mum would always go to pick your own and get loads of strawberries and make strawberry jam for the winter. And it's a great way of preserving. You really capture that flavour and the concentrated flavour of the sugars of the strawberries. Obviously, you add a lot of sugar to it. But I think, like, there's nothing more British than a good old-fashioned trifle.
Me and Dickie have been spending even more time together than we usually do. We went on a site visit to Courtyard Dairy, where we got to meet owner Andy and try out some of their amazing cheeses. I loved making this episode.
Now then, Andy.
How are we doing? You well?
All right.
How are we doing, Tommy? You well, Dickie?
Yeah, good of you.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you again.
It's nice to be here.
Right, shall we go and eat some cheese?
Yeah.
Right, let's go on.
Smell
cheese.
Yeah, so what we did is, you've been a long time since you've been, well, not too long, but pre-pandemic.
It's way bigger. This was a museum.
Yeah, it was a museum. So this is Phil, sorry. And then this is Jenny. And Jenny's been with us for 7 years for her sins.
Hi, Jenny. Nice place to be.
So yeah, so it was a little, last time you came, we just had the little shop here, and just that entrance.
Yeah.
Then the museum, then the cafe upstairs. Then the pandemic changed everything. We had to space people out more, we had to close the cafe. So we knocked through the walls and we put a brand new entrance in. And then we decided to double the cheese counter. So a lot more cheese in here, a lot more cheese to taste.
It's absolutely, I think because now it's so much bigger, there's just so much to look at. It's almost quite overwhelming.
This, we will become a restaurant. So,
wow.
So it's only gonna be open during the day. But this is, we're going to outsource this, so we have a really great company who we work with in London called The Cheese Bar, and they're going to take and run this because wow. I want to concentrate on making the cheese, maturing the cheese, and I want to make the whole place about cheese. You know, I don't want anything in here that doesn't sing for cheese. We're not trying to become some destination other than for farm cheese and walnut cheese.
It's just spreading your mantra, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's the thing. Yeah. And it always gets a bit romantic, and I know I say it a lot, but it's like, it makes a real difference.
Yeah.
Like, you want to create like a legacy, which is like all these new, supported all these cheesemakers, but also new ones, like you say, popping up.
Yeah.
And educating people, because there's a lot of cheese eating in this country.
We need to get more people eating this style of cheese, because it tastes really good. Like Duncan, who works for us, Duncan's in his 60s, started working for us packing boxes, had never eaten cheese like this, you know? And, you know, just works in our warehouse packing boxes, and every month all our staff get a little bag of cheese to take home, you know, they get a subscription to our club. And now you're probably our best customer, right? You know, and you think that how many people out there, they're like Duncan's, who all their life have kind of, you know, gone to the supermarket, lived that kind of life, and then actually, and he's prepared, because the thing about cheese, what I love about cheese is, you can get the best cheese in the world, and I'm not saying that's what we've got, but that's what we're aiming for. And it's still affordable. It is more expensive than Cathedral City, but it is still affordable. It's not like the best car in the world, or the best piece of technology, or the best wine. I can't afford that. But the average man can still get an amazing cheese board as a treat and sit down at home. And I think that's a nice thing, and we should put more emphasis on that.
While we were at Courtyard Dairy, Dickie and I had a friendly-ish pizza-making competition, which got pretty competitive.
Well, I think it's a little unfair because Dickie actually used to work in a pizza restaurant.
I did.
I think my pizza will have better flavour, put it that way.
Well, mine's preserved and that's where all the flavour is, so I mean...
But yours probably might look better because I'm a bit scared of getting stuck to the paddle, to be honest.
I mean, it's going to be pretty embarrassing if I don't win, really, because, I mean, I know it's all down to flavour, but like you said, I did work in a pizza restaurant for 4 years, so hopefully I've got a good technique. Oh, look at the colour. I think we're ready. Oh, look at that.
You sure it's had long enough?
Yeah. Look, let me try and...
To be fair, it looked and smelt better than I expected, but I had a few special plans of my own up my sleeve, starting with lamb fat.
So, some nice Yorkshire olive oil, aka lamb fat infused with mint.
Hang on, isn't that classed as a preserve?
What, fat?
Yeah, well, like I made that, so it's not really fresh, is it? It was preserved last year, so I didn't...
It's just... what?
Yeah, but your whole pizza was meant to be fresh, not preserved.
Howay, Dickie, you've got to let me have at least one preserved ingredient.
So I've got some little courgettes which I've sliced real thin and just dressed in my minty lamb fat, which I'm hoping is just going to render down and you're going to get that sort of, you know, like lamb and sort of fresh cheese is a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like people do lamb and goat's curd, like lamb and sheep's curd.
Feta's nice,
feta,
isn't it?
Exactly. It's that sort of vibe.
Yeah.
So everything in here is fresh, acidic. I'm going to finish it with lots of herbs. I'm going to steal some, whatever's in that hedgerow down there, that's going on it.
Oh, they're both really good. Mm. Can I be really diplomatic? I don't know.
Diplomacy is not our strongest point.
I think...
It's the lamb fat for me. But that's me. But Cass is the...
If I'm honest, I really like yours, but I think I'd go back for a second slice of that one. Just because it is a bit fresher. Oh no.
Unbelievable.
And it wasn't just Dickie who used the podcast for an excuse to get away from Oldstead. My brother James joined me on a visit to Cooper King Distillery, the people behind our incredible range of distillates and spirits. I would say it was a memorable visit, but by the time we emerged from the whiskey tasting, it was hard to remember anything.
Oh, so this is a bit like walking to Dickie's Palace of Preserves, isn't it?
Your noses.
Oh wow!
In you go. Go on.
Oh
this
my
is
goodness!
A palace of preserves.
Oh wow! It just—it's like oak whiskey. All these beautifully stamped casks.
I thought the alcohol unit we had at the farm was a potent mix, but this is something else. The air is heady and thick with, well, booze.
Because we're only filling 50 casks a year, we instead of going to a broker and just buying 50 casks from them, we would rather go and meet the people who are producing the spirit that's been in these casks first. So we went and visited a small bourbon distillery. They empty their casks fresh, put them on a pallet, send them straight to us door to door.
So when they say BOU, is that bourbon and then that's rye?
Yeah, rye whiskey. There's a Madeira there. We've got...
There'll be some cognac.
Cognac, Armagnac.
Where's 124? Can anyone see 124?
Oh, is it in the other container?
I don't know.
I found it.
Have you? Hey.
Wow, yep. Look at that. That's amazing.
So that's a 100-litre bourbon cask, which came from Kentucky, and we filled that about 8 months ago. So that's just at the start of its journey, but it'll be starting to take on some of those nice, sweet bourbon notes. But that probably won't be ready to bottle for another few years yet, James, so you're just going to have to be patient with
that is not a virtue that James has.
Can I taste some now? Can we taste a little sample?
Yeah, why not?
Wow, yeah, that'd be amazing.
To get inside, Abby's got a tool for that. A brilliantly named tool.
So I'm going to take the bung out of this cask.
It's quite agricultural, isn't it? You just hit it with a
just hit it with a hammer until it comes out.
Nothing technical.
Well, what's this tool? So it's like a long.
Yeah, so this is a spirit thief. So we are literally
a spirit thief.
Spirit thief.
Yeah, that's its name.
Wow, that is a great name.
So I'm just gonna mix up spirit inside so we get a nice even sample.
So that's gonna be a cast strength. That's probably around 59%.
This whiskey smells amazing. Well, it's not whiskey, sorry. This new make that's been aged for 8 months.
Yeah.
It smells amazing.
You've got loads of the character there. So that's the... That is Cooper King
you know, our spirit character. Really apple-y, malty.
I'm looking at it's and the new make was clear, and this has got a slight kind of just little hint of golden colour, but not like, you know, whiskey's like a dark gold, isn't it? So it's just started, you can see it starts to take a little bit of the colour from the barrel.
Yeah, and you should be getting some of that nice vanilla coming through now from the oak. You'll be getting some sweetness from the bourbon.
Smell I got was vanilla, yeah. And sort of just sweet oak.
I suppose you're imagining from a bourbon cask that vanilla is going to be one of those predominant flavours.
Yeah.
Because that's what you get in bourbon, isn't it?
Over time we might start to see some spice, some clove. And bourbon casks are really good for bringing sort of coconut notes as well.
How is it, James? Did you try it?
It's absolutely amazing. Can we bottle it now?
I hope you'll agree that this season has been packed full of flavour, and I hope it's also inspired you to try some different things at home too. From our amazing elderflower cordial, to taking on some of the advice about barbecues, to perfecting the perfect cricket tea, or having a go at a Medisweet frangipan tart. I've loved seeing your emails come through with some of the cooking triumphs and a few disasters as well. There's been one other new element this season, and that's been my Well Seasoned Members Club. On there's been a bunch of bonus recipes, extended interviews, and much more. There's a monthly newsletter, and we've been giving away some special prizes too. In June, it was a very cool Kasai grill, complete with all the tools and accessories you need, which one lucky winner walked away with. And in July, we gave away a meal and stay at the Abbey Inn. But I know most of you have been looking forward to this moment, the giveaway of our star prizes. Firstly, I've got two tickets to my Home of Food Festival at Lord's Cricket Ground in London. I've told you lots about my food festival and everything we have in store. And the winner, who will receive complimentary tickets and get to meet me and all the fellow chefs down there and have lunch prepared by my head chefs, Callum and Will, is Jack Yates. Congratulations, Jack, and I can't wait to see you at Lord's in September. For everyone else, there's still tickets available. The festival is on September the 9th and 10th, and I promise you'll have an absolutely fantastic time. So come on down and see what all the fuss is about. Now, there's one more prize, and this one I can't quite believe we're giving away. We've got a very special VIP package, which we've never done before at the Black Swan. Our winners will enjoy a trip up to Oldstead, a tour of the farm and the garden, a trip foraging with me and Dickie, and then a few hours to relax in your room before enjoying a delicious tasting menu. And after a good night's sleep, we've got our famous breakfast to enjoy before you head home. It's going to be a really special prize, and we cannot wait to welcome our visitors up for this unique experience. So, the moment of truth. Our winners are Victoria Welton. Amazing. Congratulations, Victoria. I really cannot wait to welcome you up to Oldstead. I want to say a massive thank you to all of our subscribers. It's the first time we've done anything like this, and it's helped to make sure the podcast ran throughout the summer. We love that so many of you are enjoying the updates from life here in Oldstead. Keep subscribing though, because while the podcast is taking a break for a few weeks, we'll still be sending out the newsletter and some seasonal recipes just for well-seasoned members. And we've got a brand new giveaway in September too, with a fantastic Oldstead hamper topped up with produce from some of our favourite suppliers, including Cooper King and Courtyard Dairy. Thanks again to everyone for listening. I'm going to find a spare table outside the Abbey Inn for a well-earned pint. Have an incredible last few weeks of summer, and Seasoned will hopefully be back for a brand new season in the autumn.